This is a Power 98.7 podcast. Now we're talking. Subscribe to Power 98.7 podcasts in iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. There's more on power987.co.za.
It's now time for us to talk about what today is, International Women's Day. And I want to quote a woman I've admired, deeply admire, the late former Justice of the Supreme Court and advocate for wholesale human rights, Ruth Bader Ginsburg. She said women's rights are an essential part of the overall human rights agenda. Trained on the equal dignity and ability to live in freedom all people should enjoy. And I think this is where sometimes conversations about women's rights get lost in translation, because people think, oh, women's lib, give 50-50. No, that's sort of partly it. Nobody's saying there's no complementarity between the roles men play in our communities and our homes and the roles women play. It's not about I wash the dishes, therefore you fix the roof. It's the respect quotient. It's that when you look at a woman, you should intrinsically see her as a whole, full human being and depart from there. You shouldn't look at her and say she's a woman and then decide how you're going to categorize her, which kind of a woman, a good woman, a bad woman, a rebellious woman, a loud woman. She's whole and human. And that's where the issue of equality, respect and dignity begins. And to add to this, Susan B. Anthony, she once said, in a true republic, men have rights and nothing more. And in that republic, women have rights and nothing less. Because when we discuss issues around women, society wants to qualify how many rights women should have. And it's never really about equality of the opportunity, the sense of security they feel, the dignity and the respect afforded to them. Whereas men have it wholesale. You're just born a man and therefore you're born with that intrinsic respect. A woman must earn it. A man acquires it. Herein lies the problem. So today is the observance of International Women's Day, a day that the United Nations set aside in 1975 to really create an opportunity to evaluate progress for women and to reinforce conversations around equity, parity, dignity, security. And so we're going to do that today with Moline Marume, who's the program specialist at UN Women in South Africa, and the South Africa being the multi-country office. Good day, Moline.
Morning, Lerato. Good morning, viewers.
And is it Moline? That's how I pronounce it?
Yes, that's correct. It's okay.
Moline. Oh, Moline. Thank you so much.
Moline.
Okay.
Yes.
Thank you so much for coming through, Moline. So today, and this year, the UN, along with the World Bank and other agencies, are commemorating and celebrating the day under the focus of digital access for all. And in parts of Australia, they've taken it forward and said women need to crack the code. So it's really about preparing women in a world of STEM, science and tech to be front of mind. Why is this the focus, making sure that women are brought into this digital economy?
Hi, thank you so much, Lerato. I think in terms of, if you're looking at the world and where we are going increasingly digital. Information is easily accessible online. You get information, you look for work online. So there's a lot of opportunities online. So if women don't have that access, and then when we look at the statistics in terms of where women are, we find that women are left behind when it comes to digital access. Not as many women have access to internet or to the mobile phones. For us in Africa, for most parts of Africa, we are accessing the internet in most parts of the region through mobile phones. But ownership of mobile phones is much less for women overall on the continent. Mm. So because of that, so what they are trying to focus on this year is to ensure that there's easier access for women, easier access for countries, for member states, to make it easier for women, for girls to actually take up STEM cells. I mean, STEM
subjects.
Sorry, I'm going into the health.
Yeah.
to take over the, you know, the engineering field and learn those kinds of things, because this is where the future of work is. Everything is now digital. After COVID, we all went digital. So the coding, everything has to be online. Right. And if you don't have women involved in that, the gender gap is going to increasingly get bigger and bigger, and women are going to be left behind.
Yes, and the future of work is such an important thing, because research shows that by the year 2030, you know, 2030 is just 7 years away, something like 280 million jobs in Africa are going to be digital jobs. And so if women want to be in that job market, they need to have these skills.
Exactly, exactly. And even now, when we are looking at globally, we only have, I think, at least about 28% of engineering graduates that are women, and only 22% of women are in artificial intelligence globally. And this is, you know, we have electrical cars, we have everything. And if you don't have that, and we still have women informal, even for the informal workers, where we find the greatest number of women, again, you need the technology, you need the mobile app to be able to see where, you know, where is your merchandise, where is your stuff coming from, so that you can actually get the best price. Yeah. But without that, that lack of information leaves you behind. As they say, information is power. And if you don't have that, and a lot of the information is online.
So marketing of businesses, trading, pay systems, and just interacting with customers, so much of it is happening in the digital space. And women being traders by nature should be able to access these platforms, is what you're saying.
Exactly.
Okay. So other organizations, and I'm thinking of organizations in Texas that I came across yesterday, in India and Trinidad, they are commemorating and celebrating today under a different theme. And theirs is hashtag embrace equity. And to that end, Twitter has dedicated a portal to this campaign on embracing equity. Why is there another focal point on equity? So digital access is one issue, but another issue seems to be equity.
I think the equity actually works. It complements the digital access, because without, so when you're looking at equity, you're looking at the fairness of things, access to the same opportunities, not just the equality, but do you have the same access to the same opportunities? And when you have, when you're looking, I think as you spoke earlier, that men are already born with, it's acquired, the rights that they have, and yet women have to work for them. So it's the same thing around equity. If you're embracing equity, then you're looking at from your population or from your group of people, the women that you have, if you're giving a certain service or making something available like digital technology, is everyone starting from the same pace, from the same place? Are women as employed? Do they have access to jobs as the men? So then if you're putting something that women would require something else to be able to get, you're putting mobile phones or you're putting mobile stations somewhere. For women, it's different. She might have to, she might need to get, you know, access to transport to be able to access this. So when you're looking at where they are starting from, which is the equity part and the access to the same opportunity, it might be access to the same opportunities, but because they are starting from different places, for women, it's much harder. The access to marketing information, access to politics, to everything, it's the playground is the same. A woman politician and a male politician can both access, but she starts with very little money. He starts with more money. He can hire campaign managers. He can do so many things. He can hire a digital person to actually do an online campaign while she doesn't have. So where people start. So I think that theme actually complements the digital access, because you still have to start from the fairness part for you to even be able to access that digital technology and be and achieve gender equality. You have to start from the same place.
You know, the word equity means a few things. In business, it means ownership, having shares that translate to ownership of a company. In simple English, it's a kind of equality, you know, equal footing and fairness that you're talking about. And I'm wondering if equity applies to this. Is it equity in a business sense, or equality just in terms of access, diversity, inclusion?
I think it's not the equity in a business sense. So when you're looking at equity, so in very basic terms, when you're looking at equality, you're looking at sameness. We're the same, we're equal, 50-50. When you're looking at equity now, you first have to achieve that equity before you get to equality. So when you're looking at gender equity, you're looking at again, as I explained, that if you're putting in place something, are these people starting from the same thing? Because oftentimes we get arguments that no, we are providing the same. So take it from an analogy, say, of people trying to get apples from a tree. You have three, you have men and women, and it's a very tall tree with fruits. So because the man, you just put the same crate and say, just pick it up. But because she probably is not as tall, and this is very simple terms, she's very tall, he's very tall, he can access, she can access. Mm. But when you're looking at it from an equity perspective, because she's shorter, you have to put some more crates so that she's on the same level as him. And then they can both access the fruit.
I like that analogy, because I'm literally 5'2" and I can relate to what you're saying. So this year, what are African women talking about in this global commemoration, celebration? But the African women in the conversation, what are they saying?
So for African women, I think, again, they are looking at the same things, issues around gender equality and women's empowerment, and the issues around equality, gender equality, that then affect women, the lack of access, the poverty, it's much higher for women. Mm. Access to education is much lower for women. Poor health, nutrition, lack of political power, all those things actually affect women more than they affect men when it comes to access to employment. So when we look now at access to technology in terms of the gender gap in access to digital tools and services, it's much greater for women with lower literacy. For people with low income, of course, this is where we find most of the women. Mm. For people living in rural areas, most of the women are in rural areas. Mm. For people in remote areas, migrants, women with disabilities, older women, we know about the widows. So for all the indicators, you find that women, when it comes to accessing digital tools, I think you've heard of our parents, you know, our mothers or aunts, when they're like, I can't use this phone, can you help me? Yeah. So that alone is because of that lower literacy, and because they don't access it in the world of work, whereas the men is at work all the time. Certain things they are learning as they're at work, but because women are not in the world of work, they're in informal spaces. So it's not as easy to learn these things as it is for men. So in terms of that access, so it's around those issues that women in Africa are pushing for, that women in rural areas that are farmers, let them have access to technology that they can use to access markets, and it makes it easier for them. They don't have to spend so much money trying to ferry their products from one area to the next and spending so much time when they could cut that time and actually have more time to do other things.
You know, somebody listening to you right now might say, but for goodness sake, African nations commit themselves to UN agendas on sustainable development goals. Every year we hear about more money being put into primary school education or basic education, more money into healthcare, you know, support for smallholder farmers. And yet every year we talk about African women being the face of poverty, having less literacy, employment opportunities. Why do the inputs not match the outcomes at the end every single year?
I think it's a difficult one. I think for that is the political will and the people behind. So for us, I think in terms of when you're looking at patriarchy, Africa has, we have the greatest numbers proportion-wise of men who believe that women still belong in the home. So when you're now looking at these policies that we're signing up to, there are people behind those policies that have to implement them. The same, South Africa is amazing policies and strategies and laws around, say, GBV. But when it comes to the actual application, it's something else, because the person behind that has to enforce or implement, they have different views and norms and beliefs that then affect how they execute that job. So even as African countries sign up to this, you still have those patriarchal values that do affect them. You still have leaders who think women deserve to be in a certain space, and at the same time, they are signing up to this global commitment. So it's the same
So very briefly, you've just mentioned a very touchy issue in South Africa, GBV. It's a huge, huge crisis, and it's getting worse with each year. And from what you are saying is, even if you say the law says, if anything happens to you, go to the police station, report it, and prosecute. even if you did that as a woman who has just endured a harrowing experience of rape, when you get there, the policeman or woman doesn't say to you, "I'm so sorry for what's happened to you." They say to you, "But look at the way you're dressed." And then after they've said that to you, victim shaming, the rape kits aren't available. And then by the time the thing has to get to court, the case has to get to court, the dockets are lost. And so the system starts to fail a woman, even if the laws support the woman.
Exactly. And that's a big thing that we face. We have the amazing laws. We have everything. But when you look at the news every day, it again permeates even to the people reporting the news, the headlines. It's already labeling her as she's the one that was at fault. We have had cases on the news of women actually being killed whilst they had protection orders against their abusers. So within such a system, the system itself then fails, even though the components and everything are in place. Even when women actually access those rights, women practice and they take this up, they go and get a protection order. But that doesn't guarantee that you're still safe. And so, something more needs to be done to actually address that.
And so dealing with a system of entrenched male privilege and prejudice, patriarchy, is very important for us to talk about it. Okay, in a moment, I want us to talk about the success cases, the countries we can look to that have done really well in a variety of empowerment indices. Moline Marume, please think about that.
Thought-provoking conversations with Lerato Mbele. 9 a.m. to midday.
Mzwakeng Katlehong, you'd like to ask us something briefly?
Yes, you know, I'm reading up on Theophilus Shepstead. He was the Secretary to Native Affairs in the 1800s, somewhere there. And when you look at a lot of the Native code that relates to the relationship between men and women, much of it was coded by him, the white man from England, along with the old chiefs at the time. Take things like lobola and all those things. When people get married, they get lobola, they told mawuzala abantu bana mafinyela bana watwat. Don't women think it's time that just that one thing is one thing that they must tackle and get rid of within the next 20 to 30 years? If I want to get married to you, I want to get married to you. I don't have to have Bora Hadibahau telling me how I must then be subjugated to you. Do women not think that's one of the key things we need to get rid of in the next 20 years?
I don't know. We'd have to ask an audience of women, not just two women talking on the radio. But Moline, do you want to tackle this one? The question of bride wealth, and maybe bride wealth is just one of those hindrances. And if women spoke out against it, it would be the first step to their empowerment in a relationship setting.
Maybe, maybe not. But I mean, you must also remember that it's not just, so even as men benefit from patriarchy, women sometimes are the gatekeepers of patriarchy. You do know in families, if sometimes we hear cases, if a child is raped in a family, it's usually the elders and there are women involved there that they say, no, you can't talk about this because it will tarnish the family image. Or if a woman is being beaten, sometimes it's the mom and the aunts who say, no, go back, this is what happens in families. So it then goes back to a debate around, say, for the bride price. It goes to a cultural issue. And then you start tackling something else. So it's a bigger discussion, like you said, bigger discussion with a bigger audience in terms of, will this, if you remove bride price, is that what's causing gender-based violence?
Yeah.
Just because someone is not paying, is it that or it's just one of the things? So whether you remove it or not, will it stop gender-based violence would be the question.
All right. So let's talk about countries that do really well, that have done well to create access to education, access to graduate programs, access to new jobs, senior board and executive level access. Which are the countries that really excel?
It's usually the Scandinavian, the Nordic countries, they're really good at this. I think Iceland and Norway, Iceland has led in the last 10 years. They've been like the most gender equal society in the world, followed by Norway. And for them, obviously, things are not perfect, but they are near there. And you get a case where, I mean, 3 in 4 working age women in the Nordic countries are part of the paid labor force. Whereas for us here, it's something different. I mean, not just in South Africa, in Africa, it's different. And the policymakers on that end, you know, explicitly support gender equality at work, at home, and in public.
Mm.
You have a culture of political empowerment that boasts many strong female role models. The role models are there. So for the younger females, the younger women, it's so easy because they have role models that they are looking to. You have progressive childcare policies, which then means a woman then doesn't have to choose, make a choice between going to work or raising children. Mm. She can work and she knows that the children are well looked after with a good childcare. But here it's always a balance you have to figure out. I mean, you've had women in the corporate world that are being, if she's so successful, then, you know, they talk that she's not a family woman. She doesn't know anything that's happening in her house. She doesn't know anything that's happening with her kids because women always have to choose on this side. Whereas the more successful ones, usually that choice is covered by the policies and the support system is there so that a woman doesn't have to make that choice.
As you're talking like this, I know that some of the Scandinavian countries, Denmark being one of them, have introduced paternity leave. And this is a form of creating alliances where men sort of put themselves in the shoes of women. What would it take for a woman to take months out of work to nurture and rear a newborn baby? And could the father participate? And so these are societies that also encourage alliances between men and women.
Exactly. I mean, they get almost like 90 days leave for both men and women. So that when, and here, I think in most cases, it's like men get 2 weeks. Sometimes paternity leave is 2 weeks where it's available, or sometimes it's not even available. So you can imagine when a man takes 2 weeks, what are they going to do in 2 weeks? Mm-hmm. And then they are back. And even when they do take the 2 weeks, are they supporting with the baby?
Mm-hmm.
You know, when women give birth, they exhaust birth. Mm-hmm. There are other kids probably in the house that they have to look out for. So if you're giving both 90 days, the hope is that both the man and the woman are sharing childcare duties.
Yeah.
Then she can also get to, you remove that burden of childbearing on the mothers. Alone, and then they focus on other things.
I just want to ask the last question, and this is about gender fluidity, the world we live in, where it's not just easy to say a woman is somebody born with a breast biologically, you know what I mean? And with new forms of identity, is there a new kind of definition of women? There are some women who are very uncomfortable about it because they're saying now adding transgender people into the equation takes away from the big struggles that women still face, and others are saying no, it's part of that's the inclusion that we're talking about.
I think I will not answer that. I mean, that's a political, I won't answer that specifically, but I will say this. Even without talking about gender neutrality and the definition of women, women's rights globally are just facing an erosion anyway. I mean, 2022 was quite bad for women. You know, if you look at Afghanistan, since Afghanistan, August 2021, when the Taliban took over, women's lives in Afghanistan really, literally have been turned upside down. The highest level of education for girls is now up to, girls are only allowed now to go to school up to grade six. I think in Iran last year, there's a 22-year-old that died in police custody because they were arrested for inappropriate attire. And then you have the Roe versus Wade in the U.S. I mean, my body, a woman's body, having control over what happens to her own body, it doesn't get any more individual and personal than that, but the law gets to decide what happens with that. So even before, and then with COVID, when we had COVID, we had increase in violence against women. We have more women now experiencing violence, more women lost their jobs. So even without going towards the gender fluidity and all that, women's rights are under attack globally anyway.
Moline Marume, thank you so much for coming through. It's been really incisive. She's the program specialist at UN Women South Africa, looking after the multi-country office in the region.
You've been listening to a Power 98.7 podcast. For more podcasts, visit power987.co.za or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.